Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated April 28, 2017. We'll start today's readings as usual on the front page with Elliot T. Murphy found guilty in murder retrial. Decatur. Elliot T. Murphy, charged with first-degree murder and attempted first-degree murder, for his role in teen mob stomping attacks on random male victims that occurred in the summer of 2009, was convicted by a jury of 6 women and 6 men after they deliberated for less than 3 hours Thursday afternoon. Murphy, who has been serving an 80-year sentence since his jury trial conviction in 2011 on both charges, will be resentenced by Associate Judge Jeffrey Geisler at a hearing scheduled for June 20th. Murphy will face 20 to 60 years in prison on the murder conviction, to be served at 100%, and 6 to 30 years for the attempted murder conviction, to be served at 85%. The total sentence will not exceed 80 years. The retrial was the result of an appellate court decision that overturned the original verdicts on the grounds that Murphy's attorney at that time had a conflict of interest. Jason Newingham, the victim's 39-year-old son, sat through both of the trials. He and his wife and children were living with his father at the time of his death. After the verdict was handed down, Newingham said he was relieved, but the family still has to face the retrial of Deonta Johnson, Murphy's half-brother. Deonta Johnson, Murphy's half-brother, who was convicted of the same charges at the 2011 trial. That trial date has not yet been scheduled. "I got the satisfaction of a guilty verdict," said Newingham, who testified about circumstances surrounding the day his father was killed. "The state's attorney's office did a great job. They helped us along. I'm pleased on the inside about everything that's happened here." Helen Dotson, who was married to Jerry Newingham for 16 years, said the second trial was sad because it brought all the memories back of the terrible crime. She has not been sleeping this week and asked her sister to move in with her during the trial. "The first trial, we were in shock. We didn't hear anything," Dotson said. "This time I sat and listened to everything. I'm glad it's over. We were healing, and we had this come up again. You never get over it. You never forget it." In her closing argument, First Assistant State's Attorney Nicole Kroenke said it was undisputed that a mob stomped 61-year-old Jerry Newingham to death as he rode his bicycle home from work on August 24, 2009, in the 500 block of West Sawyer Street. The mob then attacked 46-year-old Kevin S. Wilson at Garfield Park. "He was lucky to be alive," Kroenke told the jurors. Murphy was the mob's most violent participant, Kroenke said. "He was the leader of the group. He was the main man." Kroenke recounted the testimony of several eyewitnesses whose accounts agreed on many of the most important details. One witness said Murphy stomped on Newingham's head 30 to 40 times. He said he kept stomping him, stomping him, stomping him, Kroenke said. Then he played the video of the police interview with that witness, who was part of the teen mob the day of the crimes. She said that according to jury instructions, even if the jurors found Murphy guilty of a lesser offense of mob action, Murphy would be guilty of murder because Newingham died. In his closing argument, Assistant Public Defender Bruce Berry said, "A lot of people were interviewed by the police. They were people trying to save themselves, trying to save others in the case," Berry said. "The police had Elliot's name early. That's what they focused on." About the state's star witness, a 22-year-old man who testified that he saw Murphy taking part in both attacks, Berry said he was originally a suspect but was not charged in the case. "He was telling the truth, or he was telling what the police wanted to hear so he could get off," Berry said. In the state's rebuttal, Assistant State's Attorney Kate Kurtz said the police did not focus on Murphy, but asked witnesses to tell the truth about the participants in the attack. "The same name, the same photo came up every time, Elliot Murphy," Kurtz said. Tim Kaine, Garth Brooks keeps delivering the unlikely. He's the biggest since Elvis, again. This weekend, Garth Brooks will match the number of sellout crowds for which he's performed previously at Champaign State Farm Center. In 1992, Brooks first played Assembly Hall in a show that at the time was the fastest sellout in Assembly Hall history. Tickets were $18 with a $1 service charge. 5 years later, Brooks topped himself with a trio of Assembly Hall sellouts. This weekend he will play to four, Friday night, Sunday night, and afternoon and evening performances Saturday. This weekend's performances will add to the overwhelming list of unbelievable Brooks accomplishments. He's the top-selling solo artist in history and has sold more albums in the United States than any performer. But those don't strike me as the most remarkable accomplishments. How many times does an artist sell out a venue, do it again three times over 5 years later, and then once more 25 years after the first time it happened? The list of artists who merely remain popular with an impressive number of fans over a quarter century is minuscule. The Eagles, Paul McCartney, U2, Madonna, and Brooks all have top 10 grossing tours for each of the three last decades. You might consider Brooks the outlier of that group. His music is certainly a different style than the others, but much about Brooks's rise to prominence and his stay there defies convention. His path to Assembly Hall / State Farm Center rolled through central Illinois continually as he built the foundation of a fan base that still adores him more than 35 years later. In April 1990, Brooks opened at Nashville North in Taylorville for Becky Hobbs. Tickets were $12. Hobbs, who continues to work as a musician and songwriter, released her first album when Brooks was 12. He was 28 when he played Taylorville with her. At that time, she was touring in support of her lone charting album. Later, in 1990, Brooks and Lori Morgan were featured at the McLean County Fair. They played two shows, and tickets were $4. There was no charge for unreserved grandstand seats. The shows featured a pair of burgeoning country artists whose greatest successes were still ahead of them. He was an emergency replacement for an ailing Ricky Van Shelton at the 1990 Illinois State Fair. And the true coup among Central Illinois appearances was his 1990 shows at the 20th annual Broomcorn Festival in Arcola. By this time, his photo was running with the stories. He played a pair of afternoon shows at a street festival, and after a second performance, conducted a raffle drawing in conjunction with the festival. He was paid $6,000 for the performance, a solid bargain for Arcola. At the time, his performance fee has skyrocketed to $30,000. By 1991, he was headlining at the Illinois State Fair with tickets going to $13, $11, and $9. Other headliners at the State Fair that year included Chicago, Alabama, who, speaking of longevity, are appearing again this year, and double bills of the Four Tops, the Spinners, and the Beach Boys, and the Everly Brothers. There's one thing Brooks does have in common with the popular acts whom he shares those long-running tour successes. None of them have to tour anymore. They've all made their names and their fortunes, but they all keep rolling out on the road to satisfy insatiable audiences. The ticket prices mentioned throughout this story are important only in this way. Every seat Brooks sold for the State Farm Center shows was $75. If you don't think that's a reasonable price, consider four other State Farm Center acts this year have had a higher top price ticket. None of those performers, however, have sold the venue out four times. In public safety, three lieutenants may vie to replace Sheriff Decatur. Sheriff Tom Schneider announced Thursday that he does not plan to run for re-election at the end of his current term, which expires in December 2018. Schneider said that he has devoted his career to the sheriff's office for the past three decades, but is ready to move on to the next chapter of his life, along with his wife Amy and his son. I'm proud of the depth of leadership at the sheriff's office, and I have developed a great executive team, Schneider said in a news release. He said three sheriff's lieutenants have told him of their plans to succeed him. I believe each of them has the credentials and experience to do an excellent job, Schneider said, and I'm looking forward to mentoring all three through the election process. The First one to announce his plan to run for office is Lieutenant Jim Root, 48, who is kicking off his campaign with a press conference today. Lieutenant Tony Brown and Lieutenant John Butts are also planning to run for sheriff and intend to make their formal announcements at later dates. Root, who began working for the office in 1996, said he looks forward to seeing Schneider every day and is going to miss him. "He's been a true leader," Root said, "and I've learned a lot of things from him." Root, who served in the Marine Corps after his high school graduation, said Schneider learned his leadership skills from a different avenue. "I admire him because he has leadership qualities despite not serving in the military," Root said. "He's one of those natural leaders." Butts, 51, has served on the Sheriff's Department since 1989. He grew up in the same Pena neighborhood as Schneider and has served with him on the Sheriff's Department for most of his career. "It will be a huge loss for the county," Butts said, of Schneider's planned retirement. "He is a true man of character. His integrity and work ethic are unchallengeable. His compassion for people and passion for his job and for the county have been unchallengeable. It's been an honor witnessing what he has done for the county, for the people who work here, and the people we serve." Brown, 49, also one of the longest-serving sheriff's officers, was hired to join the department in 1991. "It's a happy and a sad day," Brown said of Schneider's announcement. "I'm happy for him to come so far with the accomplishments he had in his career. I'm sad he is someone the community will miss as sheriff." Brown said he also is sad because Schneider has been such a great friend, and when he retires, he will not be able to have direct contact with him on a regular basis. He said he has not decided when to announce his candidacy for office, which will be decided by the November 2018 election. Brown said he's running for sheriff to bridge the gap between law enforcement and the community through transparent leadership. When he was hired by Sheriff Lee Holzapfel, he asked the young man where he saw himself in the future with the sheriff's office. "I said, seated in the seat you're sitting in," Brown recalled. Of the three lieutenants who are throwing their hats in the ring, two of them were in the same high school class. "Jim and I graduated from Eisenhower High School, the class of 1986, Brown said. Butts, who was also hired by Holzapfel, said that if he's elected, he plans to build on Schneider's foundation of compassionate community service. "I think I'm the right person for the position right now," Butts said. "You truly can't replace Tom Schneider, but I would build on what he built. I want to leave the office better than I found it." "It is all about leadership and wanting to empower the people you lead. With my experience, my knowledge, my training, I think I'm qualified and prepared to be sheriff of Macon County." Root said he decided to run because he feels that he has the background to demonstrate leadership skill to bring the department into the future. "We can bridge some of the bad relationships and make it better for the citizens," Root said. State briefs for April 28th. Springfield budget meeting offers encouragement. Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner and Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan met briefly to discuss what has been a two-year budget stalemate. Madigan noted after the meeting Thursday that there's a growing cry from school superintendents, human service providers, and credit rating houses to adopt a full-year state budget. The state has been without a budget since June 2015, the longest any state in at least 80 years. But he emphasized he and Rauner have agreed to short-term deals when focusing on the budget. Rauner has insisted on business-friendly regulatory changes before adopting a budget which many agree must include an income tax increase. He said in his statement that Madigan hinted that he might support a budget with changes that will help create jobs, fund education, and reduce property taxes. In Springfield's, Senate approves tax disclosure plan. The Democratic-controlled Illinois Senate has narrowly endorsed a plan requiring presidential candidates to release their tax forms. Senators approved the proposal 32-19 on Thursday. It would mandate that presidential candidates release 5 years' worth of tax returns to appear on the general election ballot in Illinois. The plan is sponsored by Democratic Senator and gubernatorial candidate Daniel Bliss of Evanston. Senate Republicans accused him of using the issue to play politics in the wake of President Donald Trump's election. Trump broke with long-standing tradition during the 2016 election by not releasing his tax returns. Biss said the measure, Bill SB 982, would provide voters with information they need to evaluate candidates for the nation's highest office. Rauner family has wild neighbors. Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and his wife Diana have learned that their temporary home already has tenants. A mother, red fox, and six pups are living under the front stairs of the director's house on the Illinois State Fairgrounds in Springfield. The Rauners have relocated there while the 162-year-old executive mansion is undergoing renovation. Diana Rauner has raised $14 million to restore the mansion, which Abraham Lincoln visited. That includes $1 million from the Rauners themselves. Rauner's bird dog Stella is not staying with the governor currently. He says that's so we don't have an interaction with what would be a very unproductive between the dog and the fox family. Lerna, Lincoln Log Cabin volunteers sought. Illinois officials are seeking volunteers for an Abraham Lincoln historic site. The Illinois Historic Preservation Agency is offering volunteer training sessions on May 6th and 7th for the Lincoln Log Cabin State Historic Site in Lerna. Officials say volunteering opportunities include serving as tour guides, working in the visitor center or gift shop, or doing behind-the-scenes work. Officials say volunteers are a major factor in the site's continued success. Those interested in volunteering should attend both sessions. The log cabin was the 1840s home of Lincoln's father and stepmother. In the south, it is south of Charleston. For more information, see www.lincolnlogcabin.org. Tax season revenue pays some bills. Springfield. Illinois Comptroller says increased revenues coming into the state during tax season have allowed her to release more than $800 million in payments for health care services. Comptroller Susan Mendoza on Wednesday said the money will go to nearly a dozen managed care operations in Illinois serving Medicaid patients. The Springfield State Journal Register reports that Mendoza's office says those organizations can use the money to pay doctors, hospitals, and mental health counselors. The payments come as the state of Illinois has a bill backlog of more than $11.8 billion amid the lack of a state budget. Democrats in the state legislature and GOP Governor Bruce Rauner have been in a budget impasse since June 2015. While this brings some welcome relief to long-suffering health care providers, it covers only a third of the bills my office has received from them, Mendoza said. Without a budget, there will not be enough money to pay health care providers as we enter the lean summer months. Mendoza's office said these health care payments are only possible right now because of judicial orders. The state needs a budget, said Edgar Curtis, CEO of the not-for-profit health system that operates Springfield's Memorial Medical Center, as well as hospitals in Jacksonville, Lincoln, and Taylorville. The aid comes days after state payments totaling $881 million were issued to schools with students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Missing Tot, found dead in her home. Joliet, Illinois. The body of a 1.5-year-old girl was found at a deplorable northern Illinois home that she and her mother shared with squatters after her mother reluctantly allowed detectives inside to search, and a day after she reported her daughter missing, authorities said Thursday. Will County Sheriff's Department Deputy Chief Rick Ackerson said during a news conference that Samaj Crosby's death was suspicious, but that an autopsy is not yet complete. The Will County Coroner's Office said in a statement the autopsy was inconclusive. It said final results would depend on toxicology results and the investigation by authorities. Ackerson said that the investigation was hindered by the girl's mother's refusal until late Wednesday night to allow authorities to search the house in Joliet, about 40 miles southwest of Chicago. Ackerson said it wasn't clear who was in the house when the girl disappeared, explaining that the attorney for the mother said that from 5 to 15 squatters come and go as they please. The mother reported her daughter missing on Tuesday, sparking a massive hunt. The girl disappeared shortly after a visit from Department of Children and Family Services officials who were investigating an allegation of neglect made against the mother. The officials saw Samaj and the woman's other two children. They noticed no apparent hazards of anything else that raised concerns, Ackerson said. The mother has two other children, but that they are no longer staying at her Joliet home. On Thursday, Ackerson said that the deputies made a cursory search of the residence on Tuesday and did not find the girl, and he said based on statements from credible witnesses, authorities believed that the girl was not inside. Mayors target property tax freeze. Springfield. City Hall is stepping into the statewide debate over freezing property taxes. Mayors and city leaders from across suburban Chicago are opposing a permanent freeze on local property taxes, a cornerstone of Republican Bruce Rauner's agenda. In an opinion piece provided to the Associated Press in advance of its public release, officials representing more than 150 cities and villages say a freeze would handicap local government and do nothing to address the state's budget problems. They also contend the first-term governor's plan fails to address the impetus of high property taxes, the state's meager contributions to public elementary and secondary school funding. Experts say Illinois relies more heavily on local property taxes to finance schools than any other state, and that property taxes here rank among the highest in the country. The mayors and other opponents say halting the ability of local governments and other taxing districts to level taxes at higher rates would also result in the reduction of essential services, such as police and fire protection, or road maintenance and financial instability. And there's a picture of Governor Bruce Rauner interacting with a baby Thursday, April 27, 2017, for the 10th anniversary of Moms and Babies program at the Decatur Correctional. The program allows incarcerated mothers to keep their newborn infants with them for a period of time as they serve their sentence, helping them establish and maintain strong bonds. About 90 women have gone through the program since it launched in 2007. The program has 5 moms and 6 babies on the unit. For the online gallery photos, visit herald-review.com. In more local news, Mount Zion teammates celebrate, share how 1967 victory influenced lives. Mount Zion. Many times, adults can point back to a seminal moment in school that helped define who they have become. In March of 1967, a small group of junior high boys from Mount Zion brought home a state basketball trophy that still courts fond memories and lasting lessons. 50 years later, the boys, now grown men, gathered again and passed on a few stories. 8 of the 10 players reunited on Saturday at the main hangar restaurant. Although time has passed, they still consider themselves close. They've kept in contact over the years, but this was their first time meeting together to celebrate the championship. Social media helps, David Hill said, and we just wanted to see each other again. The players, who live in central Illinois, Florida, Kansas, and Michigan, credited their coach, Bob Ritter, for their success on and off the court. Throughout his life, Randy White said he used the skills his coach instilled in him. We learned hard work and persistence, White said. If you work together as a team, you will accomplish your goals. Many of the men followed the steps of their coach by becoming educators, administrators, and coaches. Ralph Hodge, for example, has been coaching at Olivet Nazarene University since 1978 after being a player. Among men's college coaches, he is 33rd on the all-time wins list with 748. Junior high sports are often considered the first experience as a real team. The team considers Ritter their first real coach. He expected the best in every subtle way, Hill said. We were a bunch that didn't have a lot of playing experience together. Ritter moved on to Maroa Forsyth School shortly after his championship win in Mount Zion. Ritter passed away 10 years ago. His widow, Diane, was able to attend the reunion. He was very loyal and true to his values, he said. Basketball was his first love, but it was a family thing. During the 1967 season, the boys won 21 games with just two losses. The first loss was their first game. The trash can the coach had kicked at halftime is probably still floating around somewhere, Hill said. But this man was my hero, and I think we are all still living in his legacy. During their eighth grade season, the players competed against teams from all over the state, including Chicago, Pekin, and Vandalia. The championship was played in Canton under the title titled the Little Sweet 16. Other players attending the reunion were Jim Bray, Gary Weber, Jim Butts, Mike Dixon, and Terry Ames. Team manager Steve Mathias was unable to attend the reunion due to illness. Players Mike Clark and James Norman have passed away. Cheerleaders and parents were joined the festivities, including Clark's mother, Barb Clark, as fans. The groups had their own memories of the basketball season. We had great times with the parents, Barb Clark said, and they, players, appreciated that we were there. The reunion was filled with stories of the season and their experiences along the way that have stuck with them to this day. We were too young to swagger, Hill said, but now that we're grandparents, we can brag. In education, Hendrickson to lead St. Teresa Foundation, Decatur. Kenneth C. Hendrickson has been named CEO, Executive Director of the Educational Foundation of St. Teresa High School for the 2017-18 school year, according to a news release from the school. Hendrickson will return to full-time status next school year after serving in a half-time capacity recently, the school said. With the retirement of Lowell Brosamer, the boards for St. Teresa and the foundation agreed that the development and foundation offices should be combined under one person's direction. Hendrickson will transfer many of his current duties to Principal Larry Daly and Assistant Principal Teresa Bowser. His main focus will be to direct an upcoming $10 million campaign for St. Teresa. Details on that campaign will be released at a later date, the school said. Hendrickson will begin his new position June 1st. IDOC prison nurse layoffs rescinded as talks continue. This is government and politics. Springfield, Governor Bruce Rauner's administration is pulling back from its plan to lay off nurses working in the state's prisons and privatize their jobs, at least for now. Nicole Wilson, a spokeswoman for the Illinois Department of Corrections, confirmed layoffs have been rescinded while talks with the Illinois Nurses Association continue. The corrections nurses, 7 in Decatur, 12 in Vandalia, and 4 in Lincoln, are among 124 nurses statewide who've been told by Rauner's administration that their state jobs would end June 15th. We remain committed to working with the INA to avoid the potential layoffs and believe there is ability to reach common ground on compromise proposals that would allow DOC and INA to come to an agreement, Wilson said. Alice Johnson, executive director of the INA, said the union is preparing its own suggestions after an IDOC verbally presented several ideas at an April 20th meeting, which will be ready May 8th. State Senator Andy Menard, Democrat of Bunker Hill, and State Senator Sam McCann, a Republican of Pleasant View, sponsored legislation to halt the plan to lay off 124 unionized nurses and privatize those jobs with Wexford Health Sources Incorporated, which already provides the rest of the state prison network's nurses. According to the administration, the laid-off nurses, members of the Illinois Nurses Association, would have had an opportunity to reapply for their positions with Wexford. Wilson has previously said that privatizing the nursing jobs would save taxpayers $8 million a year. The legislation to block the layoffs passed in both houses of the legislature and made it to the governor's desk. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated April 28, 2017. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.